This is the Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 162. I am your host, Adam Mangum. This week on the podcast, Matt and I talk about the college football playoff. Do we agree with their assessment so far? And who do we think will be left standing at that first ever Final Four? We talk about Kyle Van Noy and Daniel Sorensen finally getting on the field. We also talk about Jimmer and maybe him not really getting much on the court. We also recap Middle Tennessee State and our biggest takeaways. And then we jump into basketball and preview the men's basketball season. Who's going to be the big difference makers behind Tyler Hawes and Kyle Collinsworth this season? And also, we talk about where Hawes might sit among the great Cougars by the end of this season. This is the Rise and Shout Podcast. You can download us on iTunes. You can stream us at loyalcougars.com. And of course, you can listen to us right now. Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 160?
Episode a lot. That's what it is.
Episode a lot. And coming up on this episode, Matt, we're going to talk a BYU football win. Momentous.
What?
Yeah. We'll talk about the college football playoff. We'll talk also, we'll do our basketball preview. We haven't done much basketball talk. We've promised it. We have not delivered. But we shall deliver now.
Wow. Coming at you.
And it's 162.
Not
sure why I said 163. I'm ahead of myself.
I don't know why you would have said that.
I don't know why I would have said it either. I'm disappointed.
I think it's kind of crazy.
So, Matt, let's start out with the college football playoff.
Let us do that, my friend.
So, I am an advocate of the 16-team playoff. Are you? Okay. Do you want a playoff that large?
I think I can live with eight.
I'd be fine. Four is a good start. But here's a hypothesis. Tell me what you think. This year, it is likely, based on the way the rankings are breaking out, and of course all of this can change over time, the five top-ranked teams, four being the most important, of course, but Alabama, I think, is going to have something to say about all this. None of them are from the Big 12 or from the Big 10.
Mm.
But if you expanded it to eight, Matt, you'd have the top team from the Big Ten currently ranked in there, which is Michigan State, and you'd have two Big 12 teams.
Looky there.
So do you think, my hypothesis is, four teams are going to be in. I believe there will be Oregon, two SEC teams, and Florida State. Okay, who the SEC teams are will be played out on the field. If that's the case, do you think the Big 12 and the Big Ten push for an 18 playoff in the near term? Or do you think because of the way this has been structured in the deal with ESPN, we are stuck with a 4-team playoff, even if the Big 10 and Big 12 get a little miffed?
I think that there is probably room here to make adjustments to it. And I think depending on the success of the 4-team playoff, which I think is going to be crazy, I think that they're going to have tons of eyeballs on this.
Oh, yeah.
So at the end of the day, money rules, right? So
yes.
if they believe that there's a financial opportunity there by expanding, I think they could probably be talked into it. That being said, I feel like the Big 12's first push will be to get a conference championship game.
That might mean they call Provo Utah.
They may.
They may not.
They may not.
But I agree, they may do that, but they have not seemed interested, at least publicly. They seem very disinterested in expansion. I think they've seen what's happened with the Big Ten and with the Pac-12, who are not getting the benefits from expansion mm-hmm. that they thought they would get, especially in the Big Ten's case with Rutgers and Maryland. They're not getting cable companies in the Northeast to, surprise, surprise, take the Big Ten network at the
rate that they thought. Yeah, but, I mean, come on. I mean, they should have seen that one coming beforehand. And I think anybody looking at that from the outside, if you're the Big 12, you're looking at that and you're saying, we went after TV markets in the Northeast with a team that had no real TV presence in the Northeast.
Well, wait a second. You're saying not all of New Jersey roots for Rutgers?
Listen, when you're trying to bill somebody as New Jersey's team, you have a problem.
Well, the Northeast, quite frankly, is not college football land. You and I grew up there. It is not college football land. It is a pro sport place.
And it's definitely not Rutgers land. Nobody in New York cares about Rutgers.
So what was the number one when you went to high school? You were 4 years younger than me. The number one football team rooted for in Norwell, Massachusetts High School.
Notre Dame, probably.
Yes, same here. And I don't think there was a close second. Maybe like Florida State or something, just because they were good at the time.
I would say the closest second to me is probably Boston College.
Yeah. There were a few Boston College fans. But the funny thing was, most of the Catholic kids rooted for Notre Dame.
Yep.
Most of them. And there were a lot of Catholic kids in our high school. So, Matt, let's get back to...
There were a lot of Catholic kids and a couple of Mormons.
And a couple of Mormons, just all related to us. Oh, that's not true when you went to high school. That was true when I went to high school. You had a couple.
Yeah, there was one other guy.
Yeah, there was one other guy. I mean, when your dating possibilities are really limited when the only female Mormon in the high school is your sister. So
that does put some limitations on it.
That's true. So,
not to say that there weren't already limitations for you. Just going to throw that out there.
So let's get back to this year's college football playoff, Matt. Do you, as of right now, not predicting the future, but if the season ended today, does the committee have the four right teams in the playoffs?
No.
Okay. Mississippi State, do they belong?
I think that they do.
Florida State, as of today, do they belong?
As of today?
Yes.
Oh, see, now you took all the wind out of my sails.
That's what I was talking about. As of today.
Yes, they belong.
Okay. Auburn.
No.
No, okay. I'm interested to hear who you think should belong. And Oregon.
I take Oregon.
Take Oregon. So who belongs in Auburn's spot? Bama?
No, my
TCU?
Friend.
TCU?
TCU, baby.
So you're going to take conference leader... has some weight to it.
I think conference leader has some weight to it. I like their body of work.
Yeah, they've done a good job. I mean,
you know, other than losing a very close shootout to Baylor and a little bit of a crazy game, you know, I think they're going to win out against some quality competition. You know, really tough road win against West Virginia.
Yes.
You know, and then they've got Kansas State left on the schedule after that. I think they run the table.
They scored 82 points against Texas Tech.
Yeah.
So, they have, according to ESPN, they have a 43.5% chance of winning out. They've got pretty much gimmies against Kansas and Iowa State. They are a 64.5% chance of beating Kansas State at home. And I think that Texas one is pretty close to a gimme, too. I don't think there's much chance the Texas defense slows down their offense. You believe that's the top four. I will say, I can't believe I'm saying this. I think they got the red top four.
Really?
I take Auburn's body of work. They beat one in Manhattan to Kansas State. One of the teams TCU still has to beat. They won two road contests in conference. Is that right? No, just one. Just Ole Miss. Their only loss is to the number one ranked team in the country. Now, if we're projecting the future, I don't think Auburn gets there, right? Because I think they lose to Bama. But I don't think they lose to Georgia or Texas A&M, and certainly not Samford. So they will finish, I think, with two losses. But unfortunately for them, those two losses will keep them out of the football playoff. But as of today, I think they have the right four.
For me, I look at it and I say Mississippi State and Auburn played each other, and Auburn lost. Mississippi State shouldn't have to beat Auburn twice to win a national championship. They're out.
Hmm. It's a compelling argument. I will not disagree with you here. But here's the deal. Auburn Auburn, Alabama, and Mississippi State are going to decide, by playing each other, who wins the West and the SEC, right?
Mm-hmm.
And basically, that team, whether they win the SEC championship or not, whoever comes out of that on top is likely in the top four.
Wait a minute. Let's not count out the possibility that Missouri beats somebody in the conference. Okay, I can't say it with a straight face.
No, I'm not even discounting that, dude. What I'm saying is, even if they did, I think that team that wins the West gets in the top four. Even if they don't win their championship. And then that will screw everybody else up because you can't not put that other SEC team in there. But I do not think two come out of the SEC West. I think Auburn's going to lose to Alabama. Alabama's going to beat Mississippi State. And you're going to have those two teams at the top. And I believe the tiebreaker in the SEC is head-to-head first. So Bama gets in to their, do you put a one-loss Mississippi State team in the championship, in the fourth team? I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. But Mississippi State also has to travel to Ole Miss to end the season. They could lose twice. And then, of course, they'll beat UT Martin and Vanderbilt handily.
Now, wait a minute. If Mizzou, I know this is Wonderland.
Go to
Mizzou
Wonderland. Do
wins
it.
Out, wins a conference championship game. We're taking two SEC teams, and one of them is Missouri.
So they would be a one-loss team, dude.
They'd be a two-loss team.
Oh, if they lost the championship.
Oh, are you talking about Missouri or?
Oh, Missouri already has two losses, don't they?
Yeah. Their schedule's awful. They lost to Indiana.
You're right.
Lost to Georgia.
Right. They're not getting in. They're not getting in.
But what if they win the SEC? What if they get lucky in the championship game? That's chaos.
That is chaos, and that's what everyone is rooting for who wants an 18 playoff.
There you go.
Because at that point, the SEC champion gets locked out, but the person that lost that game gets in. That doesn't seem right.
It's insanity, right?
But you can't
take Missouri and Mississippi State.
So let me paint a picture for you. Mississippi State loses twice, okay? They lose to Bama and they lose to Ole Miss, okay?
Okay.
Alabama does not lose again, goes into the championship against Missouri, who, by the way, is not ranked in the top 25 for the playoff, okay? So let me get there. Hold on. I was getting there. So then they face Missouri. Missouri somehow upsets Alabama in the championship. Now you have a two-loss Alabama team, a two-loss Missouri team, who, like you said, lost to Indiana. Does the SEC get locked out of the playoff? Mind just blown.
Yeah, what happens?
Because Florida State's going to end the season undefeated. And, man, I don't know. That will be chaos. TCU, if they went out in that scenario, is in. And then Michigan State, if they went out, is in that scenario. So it would probably be TCU, Michigan State, Florida State. And who's the fourth in that scenario? Notre Dame?
Kansas State?
No, not Kansas State. Big 12's not strong enough. Maybe whoever Oregon beats in the Pac-12? Notre Dame, maybe?
Maybe Notre Dame. I mean, you look. So you're thinking maybe an Arizona State or...
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah,
Arizona State's a dark horse. They're a dark horse. Don't you think? They could sneak into this thing.
They could. I mean, they'd be one loss. And you know what? They will have played Notre Dame.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, if they beat Notre Dame, they inexplicably got killed by UCLA, who turns out to not be that good. Barely gets by USC, who's maybe not that great. Barely got past Utah, who turns out to be decent, right? But if they beat Notre Dame, if they go into Oregon State, if they beat Arizona in the season, And then they're in the championship, right? Am I right? They're in the championship? Dang, these dang divisions, I can't keep them all straight.
Well, the legends and the leaders, you got all sorts of crazy stuff going on. I'm so glad that went away.
So Arizona State's in the South, or of course Oregon's in the North. Those two face off. If Arizona State wins out and beats Oregon, they're in, right? I mean, they will have beat two of the top 10 teams in the country, or 15 teams in the country, in the last couple of weeks.
I think if Arizona State wins out and beats Oregon, I mean, you'd have a really... I think it'd be difficult to hold them out.
Oh, I don't think you could. I don't think you could.
Even without the crazy scenario we just painted with Mizzou going house and...
Well, isn't their resume better than TCU's at that point? Even if TCU wins out?
Probably.
Or they're at least comparable. That is chaos. That is chaos. Somebody is likely, that number five team is likely to have a very compelling case to be number four, whoever it is.
See, but I don't see that as an argument to expand the playoffs necessarily to eight, because that will always be true.
Yes.
There will always be somebody left out who has an argument to be in, no matter how big it is.
But there's reason. For example, I've heard people say, how about a 32-team football playoff? Do you really want Clemson in a playoff?
Come on.
Do you want three-loss West Virginia, who's currently 23rd? Do you want two-loss Wisconsin? No. Eight is a good number. I think 16 is also good. Because when I've run this in the past, there are still good teams up in the mid-teens that are really good that could beat, if you had it seeded 1 versus 16, they could beat that top team. The other way you can do it, of course, is a 12-teamer and give the top four a bye, right?
Right.
Which, again, we're now in fanciful land. Who do you want in it, Matt? Who do you want the top four to be? If you could say, I want to project that these four teams went out and end up in the championship. I know Florida State
Who do I think it would be fun to see in there? Is that really what you're asking?
Who do you want? Like, are you rooting for any of these teams to win out so that they make the playoffs?
I'd like to see Oregon in there.
Mississippi State?
I would like to see TCU.
TCU, Oregon and TCU. Mississippi State, any emotion there or don't care?
A little bit of emotion there. I'd like to see that.
Yeah, it'd be kind of cool to have an SEC rep that's not Auburn, Alabama, LSU, right?
Right.
Somebody different. Florida State, I want to lose.
Yep.
I'm not sure who's going to beat them. they are beatable.
I'm also
though.
Done with Ole Miss.
I am done with Ole Miss.
But I think they're out of the picture.
Yeah, I think it would take something quite bizarre for them to get back into it. Because of our kinship as independents, I had been rooting for Notre Dame this year, which goes against everything I stood for as a high schooler, as I rooted against them quite, no pun intended, religiously. But I wouldn't mind seeing them in. I have no interest at all in seeing anybody else from the Big 12 besides TCU, really. And I don't think the Big Ten deserves a spot, even if Michigan State wins out. The conference is not good this year. Just isn't. I don't think they deserve a spot. Michigan State had their chance out of conference to beat Oregon, granted in Eugene, tough deal. And had they done that, then they have a case. But great, you beat Purdue by a couple of touchdowns, you killed Indiana, and you beat a terrible Michigan team. The only good win they're going to have on their resume that's really, really high quality is if they beat Ohio State.
Right. Everything else is kind of blah.
A one loss. Michigan State winning out to me is eh. So that's the technical term.
Is that what that is?
So, Matt, we just spent a lot of time talking the college football playoffs. So let's move on to our next segment, Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
Kyle Van Noy is back.
Don't call it a comeback. He's been here for years.
So our early predictions of him winning Defensive Rookie of the Year, not likely at this point.
May have been a little overzealous.
May have been a little overzealous after he got hurt, of course.
But how are we supposed to know that was going to happen?
Well, we didn't. The guy had been healthy pretty much his entire life, so those things happen, though. Also, BYU NFL guys, Daniel Sorensen put on the Kansas City 53-man roster.
Attaboy.
So he hung around, Matt, Jimmer...
You had a feeling that that might work out for him.
Yeah.
They liked him. They had a little... They didn't quite have space for him, but...
Yes, I was hopeful. I actually thought it would happen a little earlier in the season, but I'm sure Mr. Sorensen is pleased regardless. Jimmer, Matt, you may have heard of this guy, Jimmer Fredette. We'll talk about him a little bit later. He's not playing again.
Yeah, there was like a flash of hope there. What happened?
Nobody wants to play him, man. He's not... I said this before. You were hopeful about his Pelican term. He had some great preseason games. Right or not, he has a reputation as someone that can't defend. And he's not going to play in the NBA. He's just never going to have a significant role. He just hasn't on any good team, and I just don't see it. It stinks. This is not what I thought was going to happen. I thought the floor was, why can't I think of his name? I thought the floor was like a Redick type of career, where maybe he was, you know, too hyped at the beginning, but then they find a role for him, you know, shooting threes and coming off the bench. But I just don't see it, dude. NBA stinks.
Yeah, that's too bad.
We love Jimmer. So we're going to get into more football, college football BYU stuff. But Matt, maybe the most depressing news of the entire week is Jamal Williams is out for the season.
Mm-hmm.
And based on, if you read between the lines of what Bronco said, he may have had like multiple tears.
Yeah.
And I wonder if he'll be ready for... He's certainly out for spring. We'll have Taysom and Jamal not playing in spring ball, so we'll get no idea what the offense is going to look like next year. And I'm not sure Jamal's going to be ready to start the season.
If it's as bad as it may be...
And we are speculating.
Right. I think that gets called into question.
Yeah. It's terrible, man. It's terrible. I mean... He may be, and whether he's the best running back BYU's ever had, you could debate up and down. There's certainly some other candidates. And he won't have quite the body of work that he should have had if he had played healthy four seasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he's certainly one of my favorites. I love watching him run.
Oh, he's so good.
Speed, power, desire... All those things that you love out of a running back. Was he maybe as explosive as a Luke Staley? Probably not. Was he as elusive as some of the other guys we've had? Maybe not. But he was kind of that complete package of running back. And we'll get to his impact a little later. Well, actually, let's talk about his impact.
Well, everybody loves the guy, right? I mean, all accounts, everybody loves him.
Yes. And I mean, his mom is active on Twitter. How awesome is that? And she follows this podcast, by the way, just FYI.
There you go.
You can follow us on Twitter, listener, at BYU _ Rise Shout. So Matt, but the running attack for the rest of the season is Hine, Lasike, Carter, and Algie Brown if he can get healthy. And Hine's working on a bad foot that he decided not to have surgery on. So how do you feel about us going into a fourth quarter against Cal with our only two healthy running backs potentially being Paul Lasike and a walk-on?
Listen, I think you're in real trouble going into the California game without a Jamal Williams. I like Paul Lasike a lot. I like these guys, right?
Yeah, sure.
You know, when you go to a game, and you watch the warm ups, you can tell watching the BYU guys warm up. You know who the starters are. Jamal Williams looks like he belongs. I don't know that we have another running back on the roster that I would put into that category.
At the beginning of the year, during our preseason, we talked a lot about the depth at running back being, it's okay as long as Jamal is healthy. It's bad if he's not, right? Like, if he's healthy, yes, putting in that, you know, thunder back of a Paul Asike or mixing in some Algernon Brown or Hine is fine, right?
Mm-hmm.
Keep him fresh. Don't give him 30 carries a game, you know, and all those things. But with him out, there is no, to your point, there is no the guy sitting behind him.
Yeah, there's not another marquee running back.
So, if you're Bronco Mendenhall and his coaching staff, do you have to go get a junior college running back for next year?
Yes.
I agree. I think that is a must, because you're not going to know about Jamal's ability to play next year until after you have after that chance to get a JC guy has come and gone.
But the tricky part of that is JC guys evaluating opportunities are going to be looking at that same thing, the risk of is Jamal going to be healthy or not.
But you could make the argument with Taysom Hill, it's a run-first offense. There will be plenty of carries to go around, even if he's healthy come September.
Yeah, you may be able to talk somebody into that.
Yeah, yeah. So I think you could, because it has massively flipped from like a 60-40 run team to a 60-40 pass team with Christian Stewart. Speaking of Christian Stewart, Matt, there was a good game against Middle Tennessee. I believe someone on this podcast last week predicted a loss.
Awkward. Is that possible?
Is that possible that somebody
It's a little
did?
Awkward. I do want to point something out, though.
Yes.
I predicted exactly correct how many points BYU would score.
I'll give you a gold star for that.
I was only off on how many points Middle Tennessee State would score.
So let's get to that second part, Middle Tennessee State scoring 7 points, and quite frankly, looking inept offensively.
Struggled a little bit.
Have you watched that awesome, what's the name of the show? After Further Review?
I've not seen it.
Oh, it's quite good. You should watch. This week, they've been talking about this for several weeks, that the defense's biggest problem is not being in the right place, not fulfilling assignments. Okay? Mm-hmm. And they said this week, and Brian Logan also said it on BYU Sports Nation, this week they were in the right place. It wasn't anything miraculous. It was just being in the right place where you were supposed to be. Is this a good sign? Is this like give you hope going forward that when we play Cal, we'll have a decent defense? Or do you think this is, well, Middle Tennessee's offense maybe just wasn't very good?
I think their offense just wasn't very good. But that being said, I think that is true. The offense was just not very good.
Yes.
But I believe the defense was played better football than they've played at least in a while, if not all year.
At least since Texas.
Yeah. And you look at like Kautai with 3 sacks. Where did that come from?
Nowhere. Nowhere.
You know, Kafusi had one, and that was one of the things when we talked, when you asked me, what would BYU need to do to win the game? I think the two things I listed were take the ball away and sack the quarterback.
And we did both.
And both of those things happened.
Yes. And we had sacks on 11% of their pass plays, which is a very high percentage. And 4 sacks when they ran 36 total pass plays. That includes the 4 sacks plus the 32 pass attempts. I mean, Boise State was a disaster. We talked about that last week. We don't need to rehash it. But only to say, I did not think this defense, a week after getting absolutely annihilated by Boise State, was going to have a performance like this. I just didn't.
No, I did not see that coming.
I thought they would play better, but mainly because the opponents, there's a huge chasm between Boise State and the Blue Raiders. Blue is about the only thing they have in common. So I think this transformation is for real. I don't think they're all of a sudden a top 20 defense, but
no. But you feel a little bit better going into this you know, home stretch.
Oh, heck yeah.
Of three games. I don't know if I feel much better about the California game yet, but and I don't know that I was ever really worried about Savannah State, but UNLV. You know, I think if you had struggled to beat Middle Tennessee, then you're going to struggle against UNLV.
No, I don't think that's true. I think they're in different tiers. I think UNLV is one of the worst teams in the country. I think our second stringers, which at this point we're playing most of them.
Those are our starters now.
Our third stringers then could beat UNLV. They're terrible. Remember when
some of those
guys
are starting too, by the way.
Yes. Do you remember when we were there a few years ago in their high school stadium? I mean, which, by the way, used to house the Mountain West Conference Championship.
Viva Las Vegas.
Yeah, it's stupid. Anyway, so Matt, what other takeaways did you have from this game? Anything besides, obviously, the defense played a ton better?
I felt like there were a number of times during this game where people made plays and I said out loud, who? I never even heard of this person.
Yes, so that's a takeaway. We got guys, and some of them like Taukei. Did I just say Taukei?
Yeah, you definitely said it backwards. not exactly backwards. You just
Lexdysia. It's always a problem. So there were guys making plays. One of my best takeaways was this was Stewart's best game.
Yep.
This was his best game statistically. He looked the best. He made some longer throws, which he had really struggled on in the past couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he didn't connect on any true deep balls, but he did connect on some of those intermediate deep passes, which he had, again, had struggled even with those.
Completed passes to 10 different receivers.
10 different receivers. And this is, you know, obviously Matthews and Leslie are 1A and 1B, right? Mm-hmm. But he's involving a lot of other people, which is great. The offense, I think, looked, you know, the rushing game looked pretty mediocre, but Stewart looked better. So, Matt, is Stewart, how good is he? So, I'll give you this. How about this? We'll play a name game like they do on the Fantasy Focus, okay? I'm going to give you two quarterbacks. Historic BYU quarterback versus Christian Stewart, okay? I am obviously not going to talk about Detmer, Young, McMahon, any of those guys, right?
Yeah, those would be very easy.
And I'm not going to talk about Taysom Hill either, okay? Also easy.
Mm-hmm.
So let me start here. Christian Stewart or Kevin Federick?
Man, wait, that's really where we're going to start?
That's where we're going to start.
I'm going to go with, I think for now I've still got to go with Federick.
I definitely would go with Federick. I think Federick is, he didn't have the mobility of Christian Stewart, which actually is one of his best, it's one of his best, best attributes, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he escaped some sacks where I thought, no, throw them. Oh, okay. How about him or John Walsh?
I'd take Christian Stewart.
Oh, I'd take Walsh. Not even close to me. But I knew you'd take Stewart. I'm just setting you up.
You thought I was going to take Stewart over Federick.
You
did.
Yes, I did. I absolutely did. Okay, this will be a fun one. Christian Stewart or your former man crush, Riley Nelson.
Christian Stewart.
I knew you were going to say that. I would also pick Christian Stewart. I think that's the line, dude. I think that's the line. I think he is a better player, overall player, than Riley Nelson, and I think he's showed that this past week, that he is better. That being said, statistically, he is not better than Riley Nelson. Not yet.
Well, when you say statistically, are you still talking about that in terms of offensive average yards per play?
Per play, yards per pass attempt. His is, of a starting quarterback at BYU, his is reminiscent of Brett Ingeman, Charlie Peterson, and Matt Berry, which all are about where he is or above, and all of them are below Riley Nelson. Now, Riley Nelson had some more weapons. Christian Stewart has not had a healthy Jamal, hardly at all, right? He has two wide receivers that are really good or above average, and probably not another one that's above average. And Riley Nelson had more than that, right? So it's not apples to apples. But I would take Christian Stewart. But I don't think he's a great quarterback. I don't think next year when Taysom comes back, anyone's going to be saying, oh man, I wish we just still had Christian Stewart for one more year.
All right, yeah. Yeah, well, that's true.
But we can win out with Christian Stewart as our quarterback, and maybe 2 weeks ago I did not believe that was true. So I think he's better than we thought he was. He is not Dennis Green. He is who we thought he was. Does that make any sense?
They are who we thought they were.
That's right. That's right. All right. So let's move on to basketball, Matt.
Hoops.
All right. So let's start off with a little game. All right. Tyler Hawes. You may have heard of him. He's pretty good.
He's all right. He's probably better than you or me, but...
Yeah, he's definitely better than you. I've seen you play basketball. You're terrible.
I'm pretty awful.
He is going to pass Jimmer Fredette as the all-time scorer at BYU.
Crazy, isn't it?
Okay. So, let me ask you this crazy question.
Riddle me this.
Assuming Tyler Hawes has a very similar year to what he's had the past two, and maybe even a little better. Let's give him a slight bump up. Overall career value at BYU, Tyler Hawes or Jimmer Fredette?
Jimmer Fredette.
And why do you say that?
He's going to take a team deeper into the tournament.
Certainly his peak, that junior-senior year, is probably higher than Hawes' peak, right? Mm-hmm. Fredette gave you the same kind of rebounding, similar scoring or more, depending on what year we're talking about, and more assists. And, at least statistically, according to sportsreference.com, better defense, which we talked about his defensive skills, or at least lack perception of his defensive skills earlier in the NBA. I'm going to go with Jimmer Fredette, but I'll tell you what, if Tyler Hawes goes nuts this year, say he averages 30 points a game instead of, or close to 30 points a game instead of 23. Say he gets up towards 30. I think you can make an argument that career-wise, Tyler Hawes maybe was more valuable.
Where does he take the team?
Where does he take the team? Now, that's an excellent question. It's time to go to the tweet bag.
Tweet bag!
So, Andre Hutchins, that's at @AC_Hutchins, asks, can we expect this year's B-ball team to be any better than last year? Or is second in the West Coast Conference, one and done in the NCAA, a good goal? Matt?
I feel like those are two different questions.
I totally agree they are two different questions. So let's tackle the first one. Where does BYU finish in the West Coast Conference? One, two, or three? Anything below that is disaster. Three may actually be a disaster, but go ahead.
Two.
I agree with you. I don't think we beat Gonzaga this year.
Nope.
I think they're really good. So I think there's a very good chance that we face them three times, including once in the conference championship, and they beat us all three times. And that's okay if they're a top 15 team.
Okay? Yep.
So we both believe they're second. Then last, the next question. Do they get into the Sweet 16?
No.
I agree with you. I think they are one and done. But I think their upside is Sweet 16. If everything comes together for this team, I think similar to last year, their upside is Sweet 16. Now, last year they lost Collinsworth right before the tournament. And therefore their upside went down. Right? I mean...
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's just... It stinks, but injuries are just part of it. And... But I think their upside is similar to what we thought last year's upside was. Now, Matt, let's look at this roster a little bit. AC Hutchins asks another question. Andre asks, lamenting the loss of Jamal Williams, what about Jamal Eights? Is that how you say it? Eights?
I think
Eights?
So.
I think you say it Eights. Does this hurt the B-ball team in any significant way? So let's recap his injury, Matt. He had surgery, troublesome ankle. I just saw in the media he may start playing as soon as he is eligible, which I think is the end of December because of the transfer from UNLV. No, I don't think this will actually hurt the B-ball team. It may hurt us early on in the schedule as he's working his way into shape and finding his place on this team. But no, I don't think it hurts him in a major way. If he's back by the time we're playing... Gonzaga the first time, or even a few games after that, and plays the rest of the year, I think he is one of our best three players by the end of the season.
Yeah, I think that's about right. I mean, it all comes down to that question of timing.
Yes. And if he really is back, if the media reports are accurate, and he gets back around January 1, give or take a week or two. If it's February 1, then it impacts us significantly. So, Matt, last year, the top three players for BYU, according to sportsreference.com, were Tyler Hawes, heard of him, Kyle Collinsworth, yep. Heard of him, Matt Carlino, he's gone, and Eric Mika, he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next few were Austin Winder, Halford, and Sharp. Who's going to, so Hawes is a given and Collinsworth is a given. Who are the next two or three guys that you expect to be significant contributors at the end of the year? And we say, wow, these were the top five guys for BYU. Who are those other three guys? Halford? Chase Fisher? Eights?
Well, Fisher doesn't play till next year, right?
No. Fisher plays this year, doesn't he? Or am I ahead of myself?
I think you're ahead of yourself on Fisher.
You're ahead of yourself. Yeah, see?
But I think...
No, I think Fisher's in, man. He sat out last year.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, because he played 2012-2013. Yeah, Fisher's in. I was right, you're wrong. Ha.
Whatever.
All right, so let's...
I like Anson's chances to... I was going to try and do something there with rhyming it, but the ship sailed. But I like his chances to step in and be that guy. I've always felt like he was that next guy on this squad since he's been here.
Yeah. Winder's an interesting selection just because, obviously, last year... he was a important player for us, but maybe not as he didn't play as well as you and I had predicted in the preseason a year ago. Mm-hmm. We thought he was going to be a little bit better than he was, and he had a solid season. I'm not like, you know, giving him a hard time, but I really thought he could be that defensive stopper, which he has not turned into yet. Though I think he still has the skill set to do that. So take your flavor, Halford or Chase Fisher? Because they're kind of similar players, three-point shooting guys. Do you think the Wake Forest transfer Fisher or the guy who's already been in the system for a year in Halford?
I'm going to go with Skyler because he's been around and I've seen him kind of fill some of those holes in.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Fisher. I think Halford last year was a big disappointment. I really thought he'd be a massive contributor, and he really kind of ended up being just a guy, you know. His three-point shooting was not very good, 31%. I think Fisher will blow that out of the water. But until they get out on the floor, I don't know. Now, last year, you and I talked a lot about Frank Bartley, and we thought he would be a guy that contributed. He only averaged about 11 minutes a game last year, not a significant scorer, not a significant assist guy, did do decently on rebounding. And if you look at his per 40 minutes, say he had been playing more, his numbers look decent if he got a shot. But again, poor shooting is what kept him on the bench mostly, and maybe some turnover issues. So, Matt, Frank Bartley, is he going to, if I set over-under minutes per game at 15, are you taking the over or the under?
I think that's going to be pretty close for Frank Bartley, but I'm you know what? I'm going to be optimistic on him. I feel like he's still got some upside left that we haven't seen.
Yep, I agree.
And I'm going to say, I'm going to go ahead and take the over.
Yeah, and
I think he gets some chances early. And if he can capitalize on those, he becomes a regular contributor. I think he's got the skills.
Yeah. I am still optimistic about him. I mean, obviously, freshman, it's hard. The transition to college basketball is hard. I mean, mm-hmm. Jimmer Fredette was not Jimmer Fredette his freshman year, for example. He averaged 5 points a game or something like that. And obviously, I'm not saying that Frank Bartley's going to become Jimmer, because I don't believe that's the case. But I do believe he will be a much bigger contributor this year than he was last year. Matt, one of the areas of concern always is the front court. Sorry, Nate Austin coming back. He's tall. We also have Isaac Nielsen at 6'11". Tall dude, freshman off a mission. Luke Worthington, who's a great lip syncer, 6'10". And then Corbin, don't call me Bronson Kafusi, at 6'10". So you got some size here, all right? But let me ask you a question. As you look at this front court, do you say, with Mika coming on a mission, and then we get a couple guys either coming off missions or coming in as freshmen, do you feel comfortable with this front court going into the season?
No. Definitely not.
Neither do I. And Austin, we've talked about this before. We are not Austin haters. We like him as a role player. I just don't like him as potentially my fourth or fifth best player. I like him as my sixth, seventh, or eighth best player. Right?
Yeah.
Significant contributor. He does some good things. I think he's probably undervalued by the fan base, but we need one of these other big guys to take an unexpected leap forward, right? Is it Kafusi? Is it Nielsen? Eitz is a forward and a low post guy, but he's not big, right, height-wise, listed at 6'6".
Yeah, I don't think that's what he's in there to do. He's not in there to do the same kinds of things that you need out of a Kafusi or a Luke Worthington.
No. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
I don't think that's the expectation for him to fill that same role.
Yeah, I don't either. And I think Luke Worthington looked pretty lost last year. Now, again, we just talked about this with Bartley. Could it be an experience issue? Sure. But I saw more potential upside from Bartley. Now, granted, they play very different positions than I did from Worthington. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah.
Are you wishing we had Mika?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think there'd be very little you could do to this roster to make me not miss Mika.
Yeah. And the thing is, if he was here, and then you had Eitz, and then all of a sudden, I think that's when you have, if you had a guy like Mika, it doesn't have to be Mika, but if you had another guy like that, and now Austin is your, again, is your sixth or seventh best player then all of a sudden I feel a lot more comfortable. Now, we are heavy on the backcourt, though, and somebody among Holford, Fisher, Bartley, I'm missing somebody, Toulson, Chapman, somebody in this group, maybe half of that group, is not going to be happy with their playing time by the end of the year.
Yep.
I mean, that is just how it is. Somebody is going to walk away and go, I'm not happy. Now, that may mean somebody transfers, that may be, but with you know, Hawes sitting in one spot of the two or three, depending on how you judge backcourt positions, somebody's going to be unhappy in this group. Do you have a prediction on who you think is the most left out among these backcourt guys?
Ooh.
I'm going to say Chapman.
Yeah, I feel like I was leaning Chapman, but maybe he breaks in. Maybe he becomes the one out of them, you know, that breaks in there and gets the minutes. I don't know.
He's a bigger guard. Obviously, one of the things we've lacked, if one of these guys, Chapman, Winder, you know, pick somebody, if one of them can become a defensive stopper, if they can fill that role on the defense, then I think there is a chance that even if they're not who we thought was going to be the player, there's a chance that they just, even if they're limited offensively, we're going to be able to score with Hawes and Collinsworth, right? Scoring isn't necessarily going to be the problem. The problem is going to be on the other side of the roster, right? I mean, that's where rebounding and defense is where there's some potential weakness.
I think we're gonna have real trouble on the glass,
especially against big, huge teams like Gonzaga.
Yep.
But I'd love if one of those guys could step up and be Jackson Emery Light. I would love to see that. You know what I mean? Somebody who is an elite defender and brings enough offensively that you don't have to take him out at key points in the game because he's going to be able to hit a shot. I don't know who that guy... If I had to pick one, I'd say Winder is the best candidate for that. But maybe it's Chapman. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. It's tough to say. But yeah, I think you make a good point about Chapman's size.
Yes. The size is good. The length is good to bother some of these guys. Now, once we get into conference play, Matt, I pulled a few numbers. Do you want to hear these numbers?
I like him numbers.
Yeah, I like them numbers. They tell us stuff. Pomeroy has us ranked preseason 43, okay, for whatever preseason rankings are worth, okay? He has us ranked as 43. Our only top 100 opponents this year, okay? San Diego State in the Maui Invitational, okay?
Okay.
Utah. San Jose State is 29th, according to Pomeroy. Utah's 42. Then we get this, probably the toughest stretch of our schedule, depending on who we end up playing in the Maui Invitational, is Stanford, 54, UMass, 74, Gonzaga, to open up the conference schedule, 18th, according to Pomeroy, coming in. Okay. Then we don't play another team we should lose to for like 3 weeks until we play St. Mary's on the road. And then that one, they have St. Mary's as 80th, which I think is probably accurate. I don't think St. Mary's is going to be the St. Mary's we've known the last few years. Then, of course, you play St. Mary's and Gonzaga twice, and the next best team in the conference, according to Pomeroy, San Francisco at an even 100. So, over under 4.5 conference losses for BYU.
Under.
I'm also going to take the under, Matt. I'm going to take the under. I kind of don't feel good about it because of last season, you know? But then I say, yeah. I think we'll drop one to St. Mary's or San Francisco. We'll drop,
right, and probably a road game there, right?
Yes, and maybe we drop two of those, right? and end up with 4 conference losses. Last year, how many conference losses do we have? I'm pulling up the schedule. 5 conference losses. I don't think we had 5 this year.
No, I think it's a different landscape than it was a year ago.
Yep, agreed. Totally agree. Now, Matt, in coach awesomeness, okay, so let's flip to a football question, but I'm going to flip it back to basketball here in a second. The Irish Mexican, that's at Bullishism on Twitter, asks, is it basketball season or bust now? Is there anything left to be excited about in BYU football? So, Matt, let's finish with the football part of that. Is this basketball season, I'm going to flip his question around, are you excited about this? Like on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being, man, I think we have an Elite Eight team, and 1 being, oh my gosh, I think there are intramural teams at BYU that could beat these jokers. Where are you for this team?
I mean, look, probably if I split that spectrum down the middle, I'm on the Elite Eight team side of the spectrum. I don't know how very far down there I am, given the fact that I think this is probably a one-and-done team.
But we just said we think they have their upside is Sweet 16, right?
Yeah.
So it's definitely not a 5, right? It's higher than that. Is it a 7?
It's probably 6.5.
I think Haas drives it up to a 7. Just being able to see him all season long, you know, absolutely manhandling people. So for me, it's a 7 or a 7.5.
And I will say this. There are some games on the schedule I'm excited about.
Absolutely. Great schedule.
That does help it for me also.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Stanford, UMass, Gonzaga. That is a great run of home games. Not to mention, obviously, getting a chance. Any chance we can beat San Diego State, that's a good day for me.
Yes.
Personally. We all know about my endearing love for San Diego State.
The feelings are mutual, I believe.
Yes, yes, they are definitely mutual. So let's flip that back around and finish on with the football part of his question. Is there anything left to be excited about for BYU football?
Sure there is. I mean, as far as I love watching football. I'll watch football all day long. I've done it, and I will do it again
this
year.
Yes, you will. Yes, you will.
You know, and when I look at it now, I feel like we've got 3 winnable games left on the schedule.
Absolutely.
I think we win the next 2. California is still a little bit of a tall order.
Yep, agreed.
But I think we can be competitive there.
Yes.
And that's fun. And then we end up in a bowl game and it's not a BCS bowl game. We're not in the college football playoff.
But we weren't likely to be anyway, even
exactly.
If we went undefeated.
And I think that those types of expectations, if you're living in a world where your expectation is that the BYU football team is going to compete for one of those top 4 spots year in and year out, your expectations are too high.
Well,
I don't think we're going to get there.
No, I agree. What I'm excited about, Matt, besides, of course, like you, I could watch football and BYU football all the time, even when they're losing, which doesn't make it as fun. But if these young defensive players, Warner, Lange, you know, Nakua, some of these other guys, how do you say his name? He had 3 sacks.
Cow tie.
Cow wearing a tie. It should be easy to remember, but it's not for me. Anyway, if these guys, now I realize Cow Tie is a junior, right? But he hasn't played much. If these guys turn it around here, and this defense ends up being an above-average defense from here till the end of the season. If you shut down Cal, if you shut down the American Conference team in the bowl game, now all of a sudden you go into the next season with Taysom Hill coming back and maybe a defense that is a lot better than the defense was this year.
And may actually have some depth.
And could have some depth.
With on-field experience.
You have a chance at a special season. Now, these only come around every 5 or 6 years for BYU. The chance, even, to have a special season. Now, I thought they had the chance this year, and I still will argue to my dying day that if Hill stays healthy, we beat Utah State and probably only lose once the rest of the year, okay? We had a chance this year. Injuries and defensive ineptitude have destroyed that. But next year is the year. Experienced quarterback, some experienced offensive weapons, and potentially a defense that's on the rise. That's why I'm excited. One of the reasons I'm excited to keep watching BYU football.
So that's I'm with you there. I'm with you.
So that's a podcast, Matt. We just did a podcast.
We casted some pods.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely check out some BYU coverage at LoyalCougars.com, where, of course, you can also listen to this wonderful podcast. Download us on iTunes. If you're not already subscribing to us via iTunes or a podcast player, time to change that. Time to change that. That way you get us streaming to your mobile device or computer every single week. Every single week. You can tweet us at BYU_RideShout. Email the podcast, adam@loyalcougars.com. Matt, anything else before we call it a day?
No, I think I'm good. I'm just I am looking forward to watching a few more football games before we get into long, dark, and cold offseason.
Oh, yes, this is true. And I'm more excited about New Year's Day bowl games than I have been a long time because we're going to have two playoff games that day, brother.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah. Don't bother me on New Year's Day. I'll be filling my face.
Don't even try.
And sitting on my couch for like 12 hours straight.
It's going to be glorious.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be awesome. Well, thanks everybody for listening. Thanks for downloading. And of course, we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!